Capital Investment Committee will come to order on April 4th, 2019. The first item on the agenda that we're going to deal with is in your packets, and it's remember back in the beginning weeks of our meeting, we had a document from Mr. Lee that showed the from 2018 expenditures by previous bonding committees and bonding bills. And I've asked Mr. Lee to tell us about the budgets by categories in the House budget, in categories, and he took two different ways of doing it. He took the capital budgets, and I'm looking at this new sheet that's in your packet that looks like this. It's the same information from the past, and he did capital budgets by committee area and by funds, and he's going to explain this to you a little bit, to us, not to you, to us. And thank you so much, Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and members, if you look at the legal size landscape sheet in front of you that has two pie charts at the bottom, this is a look at bond authorizations from 2000 to 2018 that are broken down by major budgetary category. So higher education, K-12, environment, state government, public safety, transportation, health and human services, economic development, water as its own category, because the Public Facilities Authority tends to take a pretty large chunk of most capital investment bills, housing, and then named grant political to political subdivisions. So in that category, whenever a bond authorization has named a specific political subdivision to give a project to, that's where it falls into that category. So even if it's a grant to political subdivision for, say, a transportation item or an economic development item, it's still counted as the in the grant category, whereas the items at the top are all essentially to a state agency to fulfill a state purpose. Then in the pie chart on the left-hand side is a breakdown of the spend of the total spending, or I should say authorization from 2000 to 2018 by type. And so you can see.
Can he get a little closer to the microphone?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
So you can see on the first, the largest slice is higher education, and then K-12, environment and agriculture, state government, public safety, transportation, health and human services, economic development. And remember, this is just the non-grants to political subdivision piece of economic development. Water, housing, and then grants to political subdivisions make up about 20%. Then disaster, and the 2011 deficit slice is the tobacco securitization bonding that was done in that deficit in the 2011 session. Then on the pie chart on the right-hand side is a breakdown by category, excluding trunk highway bonds. So you can see geo bonding is about 70%. Minsky user financing is about 2%. The general fund is about 3%. Appropriation bonds are about 22%. And then a few other smaller amounts that are authorized in capital investment bills. The next page is just a just the numbers of that second pie chart. And I should make a few note a few caveats here. This does not include the cancellation of the LCCMR appropriation bonds in 2018 that was authorized in this session, Chapter 2, and this also does not include cancellations in the bill. The idea was that this is what the legislature authorized at the time that they authorized the bill, not subsequent changes made to bond authorizations.
Thank you very much. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lee, did you track the amount of cash at all that was part of the bonding bills over these years?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson. That's in the general fund slice of the pie chart on the right, and it would also be on the second page on line 3.
Line three. Has a ring to it. Thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate it.
Would you like to address the second page of this, too?
Oh, Madam Chair and members, the second page just shows the authorizations by fund. So on line one is the largest amount, the GO bonds. Then on line two is the user financing, and line three is general fund, and then appropriation bonds and a few other funds. The one thing I should note on this is this only tracks back to 2008. I'm working on the this information going back to 2000, but still have to do a little bit of auditing and double checking.
And this was a rush job, too, so we didn't give him much opportunity to do his absolute very best, just his best. So, and I really appreciate that you did, and you rose to the cause. Let us just, before we start discussion, let us revert to the order of the agenda now with the minutes. Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, move approval of the minutes for April 1st. And I just want to note corrections at the back for the Metropolitan Council. The first testifier, Brooke W., we did not have her last name, so I want to insert her last name, Bordson, B-O-R-D-S-O-N, for Metropolitan Council.
With that correction noted, Representative Lee, motion.
Madam Chair, with the corrections, I move to approve the minutes of April 1st.
Okay. Representative, is there any discussion or further discussion? If not, all in favor of the Food Lee amendments or motions signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, I also move approval of the minutes for April 2nd, 2019.
Yeah. Are there any corrections? If not, Representative Lee moves the adoption of the April 2nd minutes as printed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendments or the minutes are adopted. Reverting back to the agenda now, I want to explain a little bit, and I was kind of, in a way, inspired by the governor's speech last night in the sense that it kind of fit with my plan for this committee that I was thinking about in January and still I'm still thinking about how the plan is working out, and there have been a few blimps along the way and potholes, and we are going to work through that, and we still have the same responsibility, though, that we had partway through when we got our deadlines that committees had to work by, and we have to be done with our proposal, our committee proposal for the bonding target that we received by April 12th. And progressing along, I thought, if we can't talk, and then this is what I heard from the committee members, and that if we can't talk about actual amounts of dollars, we can talk about percentages of budget that they make up. And that's why we have before you this document that's in your packet today that Mr. Lee rose to the occasion with last night. And that's why we have a second document in your packets that refers to the governor's information. And we had the governor's requests presented to us in committee, and we discussed it a little bit. But we can also discuss it in relation to the graph and chart that's on the last page of the governor's budget recommendation that's in your packet today. And you haven't seen that before. And one of the reasons I want to see if we can have a discussion with that, about that, and keeping in mind the things that are in the other edition in today's packet, which is just the Dyson Memorandum of March 7th that we talked about other days also. But these are the underlying principles that we've been using as the backbone of how the kind of information that we needed from the 165 projects that were presented to us for our consideration. And even though they didn't all have 12 minutes of time, some only had 4 minutes of time, we did get 165, or depending on who's counting and what's counted, proposals before us for our consideration that makes up the spreadsheets that you've had this week to review and to discuss, or not, which is fine. I want to go back to how those spreadsheets came about in this session. It goes back to a time that I was in the legislature, when I was in the legislature, and after the first few years, I thought, why does everybody always just talk to the chair? And the two or three chief advisors of the chair. And I was sitting, I had the assignment in the 80s of the Human Health and Human Services and Corrections Bill. All those agencies were put together. And every meeting was just filled with information. And there was very little time for discussion. And I thought to myself in those days, if I ever get to be a chair of a committee that has financial implications, I'm going to make sure that all the committee people are involved, and they're going to have work to do, and they're not just going to come and do what the chair wants all the time. And I wanted at that time to take more responsibility as a committee person. But instead, I wasn't given that, so I had to make up my own little assignments for each day and what was coming the next day according to the agenda was published. And when I started doing that, I was a much happier representative, and I was a much more knowledgeable person. And I knew the budget very well. And so in those years, I was able to attain the high position of being on the conference committee for that Health and Human Services and Corrections. And then in the 90s, when they broke those committees up into separate committees kind of thing and broke off, I did have the opportunity to be in charge of the finance for the agencies of corrections, health and corrections, and public safety, and judiciary. And I did involve my committee, and they seemed to like it. And I involved the agencies, and I involved the groupies. And it worked. And I know I haven't been a chair for a long time now, 4 years. And I thought, with this budget and with our target that we had, I wanted to share that with you committee people, and I wanted your input. And I got it. And I'm very appreciative of that. I'm appreciative of the people that participated from the audience, too. But I still need more input about the governor's recommendations and about what impact the people's requests for projects that came before us had on U.S. committee. And so I want a conversation about that today. And I thought we could open that conversation with, is this the right pie chart? Is this the right amount for the pie chart? Do we want to continue with the similar colors for those pieces of pie? Or do we want to expand one and take away from another? Or do we just want to have a bill put before us, DE something, next week and pick that apart? I don't know. But if anyone's willing to participate with their thoughts, I'm willing to listen and try to include those thoughts. Like, one of the questions I have is, what did you think about when somebody was coming before us? That bottle of water there is Mike Sundin's contribution to my Monday morning. It was on my desk on Monday morning. It comes from his project that he wants, and he wanted to, that's what the choice that the people have when they turn on their spigot in Twin Lakes Township for the drinking water. And I brought my water down today because I got up late this morning and missed my breakfast, and so I thought I at least have enough water with me. But this bottle of water is a whole lot of different, has different, less minerals or more minerals, or else they're more clear minerals and stuff in it than what the people in Twin Lakes Township had. And so let us begin. The governor's recommendations, and in this graph that's on the back of the governor's recommendations, that can be compared to the pie charts from the 2000 to the 2008 in your minds. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you point these two different presentations of the use of resources, I noticed on the bar graph what a large percentage is going to transportation. And I realize that those are truck highway bonds, so they're a different sort of area. But at the same time, it speaks to how we use debt in the state of Minnesota. There's been a lot of talk, and there'll continue to be a lot of talk about the need of transportation. And I think that when we think about debt, we also need to think about the debt that we use in transportation as well. So I just hope that as we move forward and we talk about, you know, the different areas of money and the different needs throughout the state, that this bar graph shows that when it comes to bonding dollars, we use a significant amount of bonding dollars for transportation. And although, you know, other revenues may end up servicing that debt and paying back that debt, we still use debt as a major portion of trying to be sure that our roads are in acceptable conditions for us to meet our needs of all the residents and as well as commerce and all those other types of things. So to me, these two graphs side by side tell two very different stories, but at the same time, when you put them side by side, they tell a more complete story.
Mr. Lee, could you explain what's in the transportation graph on page 606? Does that include the trunk bonds? Because we don't have say at all over the trunk bonds.
Madam Chair and members, yes, on page 6 of the governor's recommendation, it does include trunk highway bonding. So in the governor's recommendation, if you go to page 3, the governor recommends about $92 million in trunk highway bonding authorization for the facilities capital program. That's for MnDOT buildings, district headquarters, truck stations, maintenance shops, and then $52 million for rail grade separations on trunk highways. And then on line 98 and 99, the two largest single pieces of the governor's recommendation is $100 million each in geo bonding for the local road program and the local bridge program. And you see the notation there says GO/TF. That's a designation within geo bonding that's for what's called the transportation fund that is specific to those two programs. For purposes of understanding geo debt and bonding, though, essentially that's a distinction without a difference, that is geo bonding.
And Mr. Lee, then the local road programs and the local bridge programs, they are part of our responsibility.
Madam Chair and members, it has that has been funded in capital bills in the past, yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, we certainly do appreciate the efforts and the innovation that you're attempting to put into this. And, to answer your question of, you know, what should the pie charts or the bar graphs look like, for next year, this is probably similar to what it should be, but I just reiterate our feelings that PFA, local roads and bridges, and HEPR should account for maybe 98% of that of the pie chart. We also do recognize that there are emergency programs. I think it's important for us to identify what they might be. I think some of these rail grade separations are important. There are some other things that we should identify. One thing that we think would be very, very helpful as we go through this process is that we believe the four leaders need to get together and actually come up with a number. I mean, I know we have a number here of $1.5 billion, but as I have said, realistically, that's not going to work for us. And so it would be very helpful if the four leaders of the caucuses got together and could come up with a number that we could work from.
Would you define the four leaders, please?
The majority leaders of each of the caucuses, the majority leaders, the speaker.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, maybe I could ask Representative Erdahl directly. So the majority leader in the Senate, and the minority leader in the Senate, and the speaker in the House, and the minority leader in the House?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I was hesitating a little bit because suddenly there's also Ryan Winkler, too.
Yeah.
So, but just the leadership of the four caucuses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
And Representative Erdahl, you went very quickly when you started your remarks, and you said that LGA?
PFA.
PFA.
Local roads and bridges and HEPR. And then emergency areas.
And that should be what percentage of the pie
that
chart?
Was, Madam Speaker, that was just a rough estimation of what it would take. The vast majority. I said 98%. That could be. I would be flexible on that. I'm not trying to set a percentage in stone here today. Depending on what we do deem to be emergencies, and how much that total would be.
So PFA, Local Roads and Bridges, and HEPR. And what about the state highways?
Madam Chair, we would that would be open to discussion.
Madam Chair, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of the difference between the previous meeting and this meeting, and I feel like we're walking around on eggshells today. I think what you want to have is a robust conversation. I've had some conversations with other folks on the issue of emergencies and what constitutes emergency. How do we get to those emergencies, and I'm going to stand up for my city a little bit today. I'm going to say that, we do a lot of things in the city of Minneapolis that the city of Minneapolis does. And we can talk about the tax base. We can talk about a lot of those other things that allow us that opportunity. Yet there are other parts of the state that don't have that tax base and don't have that struggle or do have a different struggle. And as a result, things that may not be emergencies in one part of the state end up becoming emergencies in other parts of the state. And that's why when, to use a phrase we've heard a lot the past several months, a one Minnesota, we have to consider the differences for those different parts of the state. And I think when we go straight to this notion of what constitutes an emergency, and that we need to meet the emergencies, we may not be addressing what I would say are needs, because some areas of the state needs are different because of what it does to create an environment for our corporate large corporations that function and work in our state that are critical for the success of our state. In other areas where agriculture becomes
a real critical part of our state. You know, Minnesota's success is not because we're concentrated in one particular area or one particular industry. Our success exists because we have a very, very diverse economy. In meeting the needs of that diverse economy, I think we have to sort of put on a different set of glasses when we look at different parts of the state. So when I hear the words emergencies, I pause just for a second to say, you know, when we use the word emergency, it's sort of like when we talk about HEPR and we talk about the building that needs to be replaced because the maintenance hasn't been done on it for 20 years, and now all of a sudden the cost of that maintenance far exceeds the cost of a new building. So as we begin to sort of define, and I think that that's what Representative Erdahl is trying to do, is begin to define what are those things that we should be thinking about this year, that we have a robust conversation on what that means. And I know that there are, you know, 18, 19 people around this table, and we're not all going to agree 100% of the time on what that stuff is. And for, I think, even some of our new members, you know, you learn very quickly that we can disagree and have differences but still work and continue to move forward. And I just, you know, we're at a place in this bonding bill that as long as I've been on the committee, we don't get to this place till 2 weeks before, you know, the end of session. And so we have a huge opportunity to really sort of dig in and talk about these issues. And I'll just make another comment that, you know, the typical nature of a smaller bonding bill in an odd year and a larger bonding bill in an even year is certainly a valid argument or valid conversation. But I always think about the state of the economy and how much it costs us to borrow money. And we don't know where the economy is going to be and the cost of borrowing money is going to be a year from now. We have a pretty good sense of where it is today. And so I might say that maybe what we do is sort of flip that equation. And that maybe this year we do the larger bonding bill, and maybe next year we consider something that's a little bit smaller. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that comment. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And those are some very good points that Representative Dean is making. I think one of the crux of the matter is, you know, what is an emergency? How do we define that? I mean, from my standpoint, you know, starting off, it's, you know, something that imposes a threat to the health and safety of people or something that is time sensitive. Those are, I think, at least 2 points to start working off of, but it's a very subjective thing. I understand that. And, you know, going back to my suggestion that we get a number from leadership, I mean, frankly, you're right, Representative Dean, where we are right now is ahead of where we normally are at this process. But the reality is that if we don't have a number that we can really work from, you know, soon, we're going to still wind up where we always do when the last week or two they start putting things together. I mean, we can have all the good intentions we want and reach the point where we are right now, but the fact is that if we don't have a number, we'll be right back where we always are.
Representative Stanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to that comment, this is my first time on the bonding committee, but as I listened to the projects, there were certainly projects that fit the category Representative Erdahl just described. And it was the project and the nature of the it's the nature of the project that stuck in my head, not the dollar figure. And we could have a conversation all week long about dollar figures, and we will have that conversation at some point. But I think it would serve all of us well if we started thinking about priorities of projects. My priority is people before anything else. And when you talk about the health or safety, that's where my priorities go. And the first dollars, in my opinion, should be spent there. And when we have the number, additional dollars may be spent in other areas. But there are certainly things that we have heard in this committee where lives will be impacted if we don't act. And I would rather talk about doing what's right for Minnesotans than talk about numbers. The numbers will come.
Any further comment? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since you have the list of the committee chairs from 1993 to present, and to Representative Erdahl's point, I was just curious if senior members of the committee could give us an idea of, in the past, how many of these different chairs have targets that was agreed upon by the four different leaders of the caucuses.
Well, we have two former chairs in our midst.
You were first. Want to start?
And Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My recollection is not perfect, but I do recall that it took a long time to get a target in 2016. Of course, the 2016 bill, while it was passed by the Minnesota House of Representatives, it was amended in the Senate at a very late hour of the last day of session, and there was not time for it to be reconsidered by the House, and therefore there was no bill in 2016. However, when I left the chairmanship of Capital Investment in 2017, my very able colleague, the next chair, Representative Erdahl, was able to pick up most of about 90% or so of that bill and get it signed into law, because his leadership is effective, and mine was kind of, I don't know, I slipped. So something slipped there. Actually, it was a timing issue, as you may, as many of us recall. Not everyone here, of course, was around. But I'm trying to remember in 2015 exactly how we got to a target, but I'm
did the I'm Senate having and the House have the same target that year?
Special session. Oh, that's right. So that was the year of the Capitol. So most of our work in that bonding bill of 2015 was focused on the remodeling of the Capitol, which really took center stage that year. And it was in special session that we did pass that bill. Target establishment. I honestly do not remember exactly when we found out how big that bill would be.
Representative Lee's question was, did you have a target that was given to you as a consensus of the meeting with the four?
Well, eventually an agreement is reached by leadership that indicates to the chair of capital investment how big the bill will be.
Representative Erdahl seems to be saying that it should happen now instead of later.
Well, Madam Chair,
I don't know how that takes place.
I do vividly recall when I was chair of capital investment that I sat down with staff, and we laid out a very nice calendar of exactly how the bonding bill would proceed, and that we'd have so many days between particular events within that timeline so that everything would be done in a very orderly fashion, and they would have plenty of time to properly prepare the documents and make sure the language was right on, and we wouldn't have these kind of forced errors that we get when things happen at the last minute. That was a complete and total failure in 2016.
With that careful plan.
That careful planning in capital investment is really very difficult because it is subject to the whims of those at a higher level than any of us here in this room.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, from my standpoint, in 2017, the number wasn't so difficult because, as Representative Torkelson said, I was working off the base of the bill that hadn't reached the final, you know, success the year before. So I had a number then. We did make modifications, but essentially we had the number when we started out. In 2017, it was so we did a large bonding bill in 2016, but from 2016. So we did two large bonding bills when I was chair, but the second year was much different from the first. And I was having some, well, it was not easy to get a number. And then they gave me a number, $600 million, which I felt was not particularly doable. And I can remember a hearing, I think it was in this room, at $600 million, and having to go through this where I'm talking, listening to testifiers, some of whom are crying. And I want to stand up and say, this isn't the way it's going to be. You know, this is not how it's going to turn out. You don't have to be so emotional right now because I know the end of the story. And that bill never did come up to the House floor. I then asked for another number. They gave me $800 million. I said, that's a nice number, but I cannot pass it. But they said, try anyway. And eventually, through consternation and whatever else, we got to $987 million and passed, I think, a pretty darn good bill. But in terms of all the leadership getting together, well, they always do, but it's at the end. It's the last week or the last day or sometimes the last hour. And that isn't the best way to do this. I admit that. And what we are trying to do, you know, as I think Representative Murphy, you are trying to do, is to establish a better, more efficient way of putting this bill together. And what I'm saying is if we could get to the point where the leadership of the four caucuses could, at an earlier point, get together and give us a number, that all of this other consternation could be put aside and we could, you know, move on and do this bill in a more timely and less hectic manner.
Well, I cannot let that one remark go that I'm trying to do it more efficiently. No, when you involve people, you don't get efficiency. But you do get their thoughts and their wishes of what the end product will look like. And I'm trying to get to what an end product could possibly look like. Now, I've got a couple ideas that have sprung into my head that maybe we should have. I don't know what you think is a realistic number is, if it's not $1.5 billion or if it's not $845 million. Maybe we have to have an amount for each category, for transportation, an amount for water, an amount for local, amount for, I don't know, maybe that would work, but that certainly wouldn't be efficient either. But Representative Sand says people priority should come in at all spaces. And I don't think I'm working toward efficiency, but I am working for a product that can be developed with approval of the people of the state of Minnesota and the 105 communities or regions, depending on if it was a regional project or just a great crisis in a small little tiny area, that they could smile when we're done with the product. But I will stop talking because I'm supposed to be listening. No, Representative Pearson.
Let me respond to that first, please.
Madam Chair.
Please.
Madam Chair, you know, I guess to 2 points, you know, you Vice Chair Lee asks a really good question. I respect and appreciate where that's coming from. I think for the most part, regardless of when the targets are out, the decisions aren't made until those targets are out. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg type of discussion, because here we're trying to make decisions on what's going to be in the bill without the target. And I feel like regardless of when the target comes out, those decisions and those vetting discussions can't always be made or had. I think we can continue to have conversations like Representative Erdahl is talking about of what are our priorities, where are we going to be at, and what are things that we really believe that could pass in a bill. And, of course, that kind of brings me to Representative Dean's comment as well about doing an inverse of doing a large bill this year and a small bill next year. And that's just really not a starter for me. My understanding is there's still requests that are going in the hopper every day. And, of course, we're not going to have hearings on those. I think most people in the state of Minnesota that are familiar with the process know that this isn't the large bonding year. This isn't our focus this year. We're trying to pass a budget. And I hope for the sake of the state of Minnesota, we stay focused on that and get that work done and get it done right. You know, there's no positive consequence that comes out of not balancing that budget and focusing on that. And, you know, the political reality of that is sometimes this committee ends up being the one thing that greases the skids so the budget gets passed, right? And I think in a lot of ways we certainly need to focus on having that capability for the sake of our state of being that one cog that's in the mechanism that gets an entire budget bill passed. And I really think that we should think long and hard about overstating what we should be doing in a bonding bill and then limiting our ability to then help pass a budget by making bonding projects get included. I think that there is some political reality to your strength as a chair in that circumstance to get the job done for the state of Minnesota. But this idea of doing a large bonding bill this year, if those projects are already in there, there's not a lot of leverage for the capital investment chair, and I really think that that's something for the sake of the state of Minnesota you want to retain. So I also think that there are a lot of projects that just haven't come forward yet because this is not the bonding year. So we've got a lot of people in outstate Minnesota. They maybe don't have the fine professional lobbying capacity that some of the larger cities have. And when they come forward in the even-numbered years because they know that's when the bonding bill happens. So this idea that doing the large bonding bill now and the small bonding bill next cycle, and we may have a lot of projects that won't be able to be considered then at that point because they'll be competing with those folks who have the more effective resources at their disposal. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been danced around and danced around. Nobody actually answered Representative Lee's question. And last year, our minority leader was excluded from some of the meetings even, and we know that. So, no, she was not part of a target. The other thing is the folks in my district did not elect me to blindly follow my leaders either. And last year in the bonding bill, Representative Erdahl, you're aware that I took a lot of grief from my caucus because I supported what you were doing. They at one point talked about disciplining me because I was backing your bonding bill, because there were things in there that were important and that were emergencies. And there were several members of our caucus that did that. I'm feeling incredibly frustrated right now that we can't. I believe Chair Murphy has really bent over backwards to try to get input from everybody, and to try to have a process that's inclusive. And the lack of cooperation is just frustrating me terribly.
Representative Salt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for probably being redundant, but I did have thoughts much earlier in our discussions that actually weigh in this particular circumstance. If we early lay out what we can agree to as the priorities of what we do, and then allow that to then inform how we make the choices down line, that is a different method of doing exactly what we're talking about. We can decide to acquiesce to the paternalistic way that things have been done. There is some person who has the almighty connection and can decide the values. It's okay that that's what we've decided to do in the past, but that's what it is. It isn't collegial. It isn't based on this or that values. It's based on two factors that I find a bit offensive. One being, if we can put enough under the nose of some people to get them to vote, then that will call it successful, and we'll all get something in our area. That's the first thing I find the most offensive. The second thing, now, I will give anybody that doesn't like what I'm saying, that we do that because we're humans. And the human nature involved in an analytical process, they conflict with each other. So that's part of what we are conflicted over right now, is the balance between human nature, managing egos, trying to connect with values that somebody says, and getting them to vote for this thing, or constructing what it is based against a financial values linear set of things. We have a tension between things that we can't reconcile right now. And there's no doubt about that. We're struggling with it. I've been kind of watching it and thinking about it and trying to understand it. Probably you're finding that I'm an extraordinarily naive person relative to this thinking, because I cannot put that together the way we've been doing it the last 2 years and the way that this is going down the road right now. Because if the only way to success, that we must bow down to the Almighty One who is connected to the ultimate reality of power, then I'm not certain how we get around that and do work. That's why I suggested what I did, because we can do all of the valuing work. I can say to somebody that I think that the Mayo $40 million of federal money is of such import that it should rise into the system by the value system. I wrote down, our decisions right now are gross dollars. Well, that's a values decision made by somebody who has set a goal for what they want all of us to work within. Get up in the morning, you're elected the leader or the... I got to be careful. I start getting a little snide about this. The person who has taken the role and responsibility to make those kinds of leadership decisions. But I'm not certain that other than their own group, they really care or can afford to even listen to somebody else's value system. So that's why I propose let's have a joint value system. As I sort of outlined, like if we put the state's assets first, we got to go down the line, we got to hit University Heber, all of the state assets and DNR, and that's where there's a line. And if we got X number of dollars, that's as far as we'll get, and we all got to go home and vote for it. Because that's what the decision we made will pay for. That falls into, I think, a relatively strong conservative point of view. It's very careful, it's within managed money decisions, and it's orderly. Now, the other side of me starts to say, yeah, but what about the kid that's not going to get their test done on time so that they're going to end up possibly dying? That's not a small thing, but it is a reality. It does happen at Rochester, unfortunately. Doesn't hit the news because they really don't like to have horribly bad news get published around the newspaper and that sort of thing. But it does happen. Those tests sometimes don't get done. But if the test didn't get done because we decided we didn't want to spend that dollar there and you rather spend the dollar fixing somebody's septic systems or a city water system and that sort of thing, I get it. That's values. That's important to do. And if that's the decision we make, okay, I can go home and live with that. You won't. I won't go home quietly, but I'll go home. Those are the kinds of things that I'm troubled with right now, because we're still dancing around this question of, are we going to give somebody the authority to name the dollar, and we just bow down to it. And I think our past two chairs here present have elocuted what will happen, and that has tainted the process of deciding what will be in. Because we actually try to manage who gets in and hold it until the end, because then we have to deal the cards right at the very end when somebody got connected to reality, found the magic number, we can get that done, and we all go rushing into our vote on the last hour and a half of the last day of session. I just find that such a inadequate acquiescence. It's like we could enumerate how bad it is, and yet we said, well, but that's the best we can think of, and we'll just keep doing that. We don't seem to have the strength to come up and say, yes, we're going to create a value system, and at the end of the day, we're all going to not get something. And we're okay. We are going to vote for it anyway. And I know that's one of the big tensions for the chairs particularly, because it's just not a lot of fun to bring the bill to the floor and then have people not vote for it. So thanks for listening. I know that that was a return to the same old thing. So.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you. And first to go back into the past a little bit. Well, first of all, I taught this stuff for 35 years, how a bill becomes a law and all of that. And then I got here and realized I taught my kids the wrong thing all those years because it just isn't how it happens.
Fair enough.
And, when I was chair, particularly the second year, 2018, that I tried to involve you. We had meetings that I had, just with the DFL caucus. I had Chair Hausman and I were in almost daily communication about what we're trying to do. And, we put together two very good bills, both years of the biennium. But, dang, it wasn't easy, and it wasn't, again, the way that the textbook says it should be done. I never had a conference committee. I wanted to. I mean, I really wanted to do this the way the textbook says it's supposed to be done. But how do you do that when, we pass a $987 million bill and the Senate didn't pass anything? So now they have a conference committee. We have the only bill. And now we've got to work with a Senate that doesn't have a bill. And we have a bill with hardly any earmarks in it. We have to work with a document that never passed that has almost all earmarks. It's a very strange process that we have. But in the end, you can try to make some changes, and maybe a bad choice of words when I said to become more efficient. But we need to help the system work better, how we're doing these, to try to avoid the chaos at the end, I think should be a major goal. But our problem here is simply a philosophical one at the moment. I mean, it's easy for my Democrat colleagues this year, maybe I shouldn't say it's easy for some, to say, okay, let's go $1.5 billion. Maybe, heck, go $2 because the needs are there. And I don't dispute that the needs are there. But I know this, and that is that my caucus is not going to support a large bonding bill. I mean, that whether we're talking, needs versus money, it simply comes back to that. I have to have a lower number in order to get this to work, because I can't bring a large bill to our caucus and expect that there's going to be support to pass it. You guys need 6 Republican votes, and we won't have them until we have an agreed-upon number that we can work from. And, again, I understand how some of you think that shouldn't be the way things are, but we can still meet the emergencies, the needs that we have. And maybe we need to determine, maybe one of the first steps is to determine, again, what's an emergency, how much can we do. But that's what it comes down to.
What's a figure you can work with?
Representative Stanston.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could just be the teacher in me right now.
Teacher to teacher?
Teacher to teacher, and I hope you understand what I'm going to say. We've been given an assignment. Our teacher, our chair, has given us an assignment. As the students, I've never, as a student, negotiated with the teacher what the assignment should be. That assignment is the work that we're supposed to be doing. That number that some of us are stuck on or not stuck on or whatever really is not the assignment. There's a list. It's a hypothetical number. I don't think there's anybody in here who feels that that number is going to be that number. But if we did our work and we turned our assignments in, we'd have a working document to start moving on. And I see a bunch of students digging in their heels right now saying, I don't want to do the work. Then take an incomplete. But it is your constituents who are at the end of this assignment. And it isn't just my constituency. I know it's your constituency, and I followed up with you and had that conversation. Again, real people. So can we please, for the sake of Minnesotans, stop talking about a number and just do the work. Look at your projects in your elected responsibility. Use your certificates as they were given to you to prioritize in your best professional opinion. Bring your best to this assignment. and we will work together to get across the finish line. I just don't think we're not doing right for our jobs or for our constituency by arguing about a number. That time will come. I'm not saying it doesn't come. It will come. But we're not even doing the work. We're refusing. We're like a bunch of stubborn students who think they've got negotiating power, and they don't. We are here to do the work.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need to respond to my friend, Representative Sandsteed. I, too, was a teacher, probably not as many years as you, but I taught at the college level. And believe it or not, I had strong students who stood up and negotiated with me the assignment. And I actually came to a common ground with them. And that particular student who was bold enough to stand up on behalf of his colleagues and negotiate with me, he and I maintain a friendship to this day because we have a respect for each other. And so I don't look at us as grade school students or high school students. I look at us as adults with election certificates. Correct. And the difference that we have here, and I'm going to forget about the number, but the difference we have here is that we have two different end goals. We are saying that this is not a bonding year. We've gotten a little confused because 2016, everything came apart, so we ended up doing something in 2017 and then again in 2018. But our constituents, and I know Representative Bennett's not here, but she has projects that she didn't even submit because it wasn't a bonding year. We have not had a bonding tour. I'm looking forward to that because this is my first year. And so we are just here saying this is not a bonding year. We have many people who have not gone through the process that we, as the state of Minnesota, have laid out. We've got an MMB process, an application process. We have got a committee that tours the whole state to look at these projects. We haven't done any of that. And yet we're looking at 165 projects, eliminating all the others who are following our rules and trying to talk about dollars and this and that. Representative Erdahl has laid out what we think is right and fair for a non-bonding year. And some of members of our caucus would say zero this year. So we're dealing with that too. But those of us who feel that it's not a sin to do a little bit of bonding in a non-bonding year would look at those projects, those, you know, Public Facilities Authority, the HEPR projects, those road projects that Representative Erdahl, we really agree on that. And so if you're frustrated about not hearing from us our values, you've heard our values in a non-bonding year. You know, and next year I look forward to a really robust discussion as we have a bonding year and we hear all of the projects. Thank you.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, Representative Lehman said a lot of what I was thinking. It's kind of disheartening to hear that we aren't communicating with you when I think our lead has been very emphatic and specific on what categories we actually do believe are good bonding considerations for this cycle. I think he said it twice in today's meeting, and he said it in the previous meetings as well. So it's pretty evident what we're talking about. I also think equating what we're doing here to a classroom process, and with all due respect to the chair, you know, I want to work with the chair, and I've shown up at the, you know, extracurricular meetings that we've had, and we've had other discussions in the hallway and on the floor, and we constantly are communicating and talking about this, but the chair doesn't grade me. The voters do. And when the voters sent me to St. Paul, I believe, I mean, it's in every committee, but in this committee specifically, they want responsible spending. And they want projects that are going to benefit people in the state of Minnesota. We have to weigh some of that against, you know, our communities not taking care of their own issues. And we constantly have those conversations. Are we giving some communities more than others? We have to have those conversations. And, you know, we've been here. We've been through all the hearings. We've participated. We've had conversations. We've talked about those categoricals that we do believe would be possibilities for funding in a final bonding bill for this year. But again, we've got that weighed against what I would consider some extremely irresponsible language of these $1.5 billion bonding bills during a non-bonding year. And Representative Dean wasn't in the room earlier when I commented on his willingness to flip that, and my specificity on the fact that this is not the bonding year, so many of those folks in outstate Minnesota wouldn't come forward this year with bonding requests, and there's still bonding requests going in the hopper, I'm sure, today, right? So I just think we have communicated very clearly. If you want to dig down more into that, if you want to have more conversations on that, great. But otherwise, I don't know what else you're asking for from us, because we have communicated, we have participated, and I think we've been pretty clear. And at the end of the day, I think the voters in my district are pleased with and will grade me accordingly for that responsible, prudent spending of the taxpayers' money.
Thank you very much. I've gotten the message of the morning. Thank you. Could we go on to the second question under six on your agenda? What emergency projects left an impression with you from the projects that we did here? Representative Sanstead.
Madam Chair, if you're looking for specific projects off the top of my head, the Floodwood Septic Sewer Pond System, Sundin's Water Issue, Twin Lakes, I think Red Rock was another one in my mind that stood out. And if Grand Rapids is going to continue to use their ice arena, a roof that's going to collapse on people's heads is also in there.
How about Bemidji Water?
Bemidji Water is of a concern to me, Madam Chair.
The well?
I'm very familiar with it. My concern is they're saying the water is okay right now. Putting another well on an airstrip doesn't necessarily, I don't have an assurance that's the best use of money, because the same problem could happen down the line. I need to think on that one.
Any input from anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Did you mention the railroad interchanges? I think that's important. Projects that keep ambulances getting places, I think, you know, we need to.
Red Wing?
Yes. And there are some others out there, too, I think, regarding railroads. You know, we have something time-sensitive with Becker and a business that wants to establish there, so there are things like that as well that we need to look at.
Representative Dean.
thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a real struggle. And for me, one of the biggest needs, I'm not going to use the term emergency because I think there are different definitions of emergency, and I think that Representative Rodal just talked about time sensitivity. You know, I've grown up in life with people telling me that poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. So I'll give you that as the basis that, you know, it wasn't too long ago we had a major bridge fall down and a lot of people died. And St. Paul has a bridge that's in very, very rough shape. And they have been back to us several times, and I know that in that process they have reprioritized other projects over that. But at the same time, we have a responsibility as a committee to understand the full context of things, and that I would consider that one project. And since I have the mic, I'm going to take a little liberty. I'm looking at our chart, which has all the years that we've had bonding, and there's 2 years that we didn't have bonding bills. It was 2004 and 2016, which were even years. Now, I will give it to folks that generally in odd years we have smaller bonding bills, but to say it's not a bonding year, I think, is a misrepresentation of what we've been doing the past two decades. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to back up for a second and thank Chair Erdahl, because when he was chair, he did include us. And I'm certain you're going to do the same, but I just want to say that I respected that, and I know that you came to many of our caucuses of the Dems and reached out. So that was to your credit, and I just want to mention that. You know, some of this stuff is, so the priorities and the greatest impacts are, you know, some of them are mentioned, and obviously where the dams are going to fail and those sort of things are huge, but some of them don't make it, like won't show up, like Representative Juergens' trail that goes through the city. I mean, people could die if they're not able to get through their city. You know, we kind of joked about the trail right outside my house, and it's a small one, but it literally, it's dangerous. People, you know, I didn't, you know, you joke, you think it's a trail and it's fun, but it isn't. This is a different thing. It's right on a highway, and it's the same with, really, very similar. But a lot of these are dangerous, and we, you know, you don't, you know, we got up in our 5 minutes, and, you know, we say it's a nice thing and connectivity and those sort of things. But really, it's dangerous, and yours is dangerous. And there's some others when you see them. Some are connecting, you know, towns and tourism. And I mean, those are very different things. So that happens, and I don't know how you really address it. And then there was, you know, so you kind of go through the bill, and then, you know, a lot of this doesn't sound like emergencies, but if buildings aren't like Heber, if they're not safe, you know, people, you know, like the breathing, the air, and they're constantly sick. I don't know if you've heard around here, there's people coughing and a fair amount, and so it makes you question if these buildings have good heating and vac systems and those sort of things. So those are things, I mean, they're important. I mean, it's kind of clear when water's running and you see that, so you kind of know there's a problem. But it could be heating and ventilating, so it's not always clear things. That R22 thing that we all talked about, it doesn't help me personally at all. I don't think in my district mine was helped in the past. But those are issues all, you know, in arenas and stuff all over the state. So if we don't address them, you know, from your district, I mean, I can look around the table, but one thing I wanted to throw out, even though I'm talking, is that the advantage of the second year is that, you know, I think we can do a robust bill personally in both years. That's just my opinion, and I'm pretty, you know, I think the economics of it, we could hear from our finance people, and the state can afford to be robust in both years and take care of a lot of these things. But the advantage is that we get attached. When we hop on a bus, and we can go in each of your districts, and I look around the table, and we all get kind of attached to projects. And so we'll see, you know, Jack's, you know, takes us to St. Peter, and we go in and see how dangerous it was of a workplace, it's pretty easy to vote for hospital money, or, you know, fixing the prison there, or whatever you call it, state hospital, because you've seen how dangerous it is for the workers. Or, you know, I looked around the table, and, you know, you can just pick out projects in other people's districts, or, and it's, so anyways, that's why I think it's easier a little bit in the second year, because you do get more attached, and you've been on tours. But I think there's a lot of issues that we can do this year, and there's a lot of things that are safety related or rise to concerns. Sorry to talk so long.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to build off of Representative Dean, and an area of need, and I just want to express the critical need for the busway and the express bus development program, because I think that this will really go towards helping our communities that are very heavily transit dependent. And, you know, within the metropolitan region, the one of the bus line, the 5, coming down from Brooklyn Park through Representative Vane's district, my district, to Representative Dean's district, is the most highly used bus line in the state, in the metropolitan region. And I think that we really need to look at this carefully. And Representative Loeffler always said that, you know, for members around the table, when you think about Minneapolis, you think that, you know, we have access to hospitals and clinics. But what Representative Loeffler has shared is that her constituents will have to take an hour and a half just to get to their doctor's appointment. And, you know, transit for us is really a matter of life or death to be able to get to your doctor's appointment, to get to your job, so that, you know, you just provide the safety net for your family to put a roof over your head, or to provide food, you know, for your family. And so when we consider bonding, you know, there is a critical need in our state for transit. And Madam Chair, I just want to share that with members of the committee.
Thank you. Seeing no other hands, this meeting is adjourned.